Is a hot dog a sandwich?
It's meat and bread. So, the definition, I think so, yeah.
How much coffee do you drink in a day? The access to it.
I had three already. This is my fourth. I'm going five and six after this. So I'm generally at about six a day.
Company man.
And welcome to How the Fuck Did You Get That Job, the show where two not-so-interesting guys ask interesting people one question and then interrupt them as they try to answer it. Joining us today is Jared McGovern. A few years after graduating from Cornell with a marketing degree, Jared was the co-founder of the company Two Sticks. He went on to work for the Water Initiative as their creative director. He ended up stopping both of those gigs to co-found the first Nitro Cold Brew company in Brooklyn in 2014. Since then, Rise Brewing Company has built a full-scale brewery in Stanford and is selling its coffee all around the Northeast. Jared, welcome to the show, and how the fuck did you get that job?
All right, Two-Stick shout out. I mean, basically, you know, I was working in a water filtration company and wanted to create a better opportunity for myself where I felt like, you know, work wasn't work. It was like fun. I was on a team and, you know, felt like we were creating a culture where we're all kind of banding together and putting up goals and stuff like that. So had that in the back of my mind, but working in a water filtration company, we had these handheld water filters and I was using a water filter to cold brew coffee. Cold brew exploded. When you cold brew coffee, you don't heat up the beans. Coffee tastes naturally sweet. I was using really good water. It tastes naturally sweet and cold. And then just kind of was like, okay, well, how can we go even one step farther than this? And was looking online, wanted to figure out how I could brew it in kegs. Part of brewing it in kegs is you got to use gas. Saw somebody using nitrogen to actually nitro root beer and create a root beer float experience without any ice cream. And as an Irishman myself, I love Guinness. Everybody thinks of Guinness as like a heavy beer, but it's actually a light beer. It's just the nitrogen that makes it taste like smooth and creamy, but it's actually like low alcohol, low calorie. And so a friend of mine was a beer brewer and I asked him, I was like, yo, man, can you nitro my cold brew? And he said, that's like asking a carpenter if he can cut wood. So we turned my East Village apartment into a brewery and started nitroing coffee and literally would walk it around Brooklyn and Manhattan with like a little mini keg to like friends' parties. And once people were like, this is awesome, we're like, damn, okay, we think this is awesome too. This doesn't exist on the shelves. Let's band together and see what we can do with this. You know, we all kind of said, okay, let's start a company. So we started a company. We didn't name Rise for a while, but we started the company together and we just like really passionate, love working together. We knew we were making something that tasted real good. If we liked it, we assumed others would too. Went to a friend's bar and long story short, he was having problems with his like espresso machine. And he's like, oh, yo, you guys are here. Like, can you fix my espresso machine? And we're like, we know nothing about that. But if you like this coffee, it comes in a keg. You got a bunch of stuff on draft. And if you like it, you'll never have to worry about that espresso machine again. So we started selling to this spot in Brooklyn called Colony Restaurant. And we kind of just took it off from there. You know, like went from my apartment to co-founder's garage and started brewing and making trips from Connecticut to New York to Brooklyn to Manhattan. Started selling to offices and opened up a little cafe and started selling in cans. And yeah, that's the short story long.
And what was that process like, I guess, going, and I'm sure we'll go even further back, but when you're in making it in your apartment and it starts to get more and more orders and you're like, oh, this might actually be real. Like this might be more than just like something fun that we're doing. Wait, was there like a specific moment that you could point to with that?
Yeah. We still hadn't named the company, but there was a moment. We had like this like whiteboard of like all the different names and the bars that we were serving at, we would ask the bartenders like, what are people calling this? And they'd be like, well, they're like, you know, they're calling it this or that, but it's giving them a lot of energy. And a lot of people would say to us when they'd pour it out to Cascade, they say, can I drink it now or should I let it wait for it to rise? And we kept hearing this rise word, rise and shine. love that kind of like good energy in the morning, great ingredient, good connotation thing. So we eventually named it, but right before that, when we realized it was happening, we got, we went from being in some restaurants to a lady asking if she could get Rise in her office instead of like, you know, Nespresso or office coffee. Mm-hmm. So we had no business plan. We had no money. We had no name for the company. So naturally we're like, of course you can get it at your office. We do this kind of thing all the time. We're professionals here. And we had a kind of an idea of how to do it. But we basically took like a kegerator that, you know from like CO2 and beer and all that kind of stuff. And we just replaced the fittings so that it was nitro fittings. And we wheeled the kegerator into her office. And after that, a couple other people hit us up that went to that office and asked for it too. And so now we're in a couple bars and now we're in a couple offices. And at that point in time, we kind of looked at each other and we're like, hey, we got to name this thing. But B, this is bringing in money. And now we have a regular schedule here where we're brewing like every Monday, we're delivering every Tuesday, we're picking up kegs every Friday, cleaning them every Saturday. And we're like, this is a system. And we've created this like system and that system works. So let's all quit our jobs and go. And it was somewhat, you know, shortly thereafter, a big break for us was when we launched our first cafe out of a friend's clothing store on 85 Stanton Street in the Lower East Side. And she had a window right by the entrance of her spot. And like the entire cafe was smaller than this room. It was like, about like 10 feet wide, could fit two kegerators. We had two kegerators on tap in the Lower East Side and a fold out bar and fold out windows. And I remember the real moment when I actually officially quit my job was like, I made like $68 or something that day. And I was like, if I do this every day, making $68 a day, 30 days, that's a living. And this is fun. And this is awesome. So that like first amount of being like, I can live on this, was when we actually officially like quit our jobs and went.
That's awesome. I want to go back before we go too forward into Rise. Like, when you were at Cornell, when you were graduating, like where was your head at? Did you always have this like entrepreneurial like kind of goal, or what was your mindset leaving college?
Yeah, well, I spent 4 years playing lacrosse there, and that was awesome, an awesome experience. And I took a fifth year there, and I spent the summer in Los Angeles, and I worked at a production company, and I like read a script of this movie called Waiting, and they hit me up and they're like, hey, we're gonna make this movie. I was like, okay, cool. So I ended up spending my second semester, I was only taking two classes. One was the history of baseball, just like the last class I had to, like, you know, actually get a major from American Studies. And both my classes only met once a week. So I'd fly down to New Orleans, shoot to like help the movie. I was like the lowest in the totem pole, but like watch them make a movie and then fly back to Cornell. And it was really interesting to see how a movie is a business, right? It starts with an idea. The idea is the script, and then you got to get the actors together. So you got the business plan, then you have the product, then you actually have to manufacture the product. You have to have all the actors work together. Then you have this compact thing that is the product. And then you got to take that product and like brand it and market it and do all that kind of stuff. And then you launch it and you sell it to people, movie theaters, Netflix now, whatever. And so it was like a really 1 year like crash course in like entrepreneurs, like business, you know? And I was like, okay, maybe I'll do some movie stuff, but I'm not really that good at any of it. I'm not a good actor, you know, I'm not a writer. So I didn't know where my place would be there. So I moved down to Miami and I worked at a marketing company. And I kind of started working with young brands that were launching down in Miami. And I got to see that side of it too, and like what they needed to do and how they needed to get their product out there. And the biggest thing for me was I wanted to always work with something that I didn't feel was work and I was passionate about. And I felt like I could be on a team with other people that were passionate about. And I think close to that athletic experience, you know, like you love being in the trenches with somebody and all having that same goal of like, doesn't matter who scores, it doesn't matter who has the defensive stop. It doesn't matter what individual does anything. You're all just trying to win the game. And so I always wanted to be on a team of, you know, people in work where we, you know, that felt that way. And sometimes the best way to do that is to kind of start it yourself, start it with some people that you love, and make sure that you create something that you love so you never feel like you're selling it. You always feel like you're just sharing it with the world, you know? And I think that's gives you a lot of motivation and, you know, love for what you do.
That's huge. So you're at the marketing company, and the Toothsticks, how did that come about? And what, like, I it feels like the entrepreneurship journey, you know, was kind of on its way, but what was it about that idea where you're like, oh yeah, that's the one?
So that is the kind of like, that's the one that you learn from your mistakes and then figure out how to, like, you know, take those lessons, apply those lessons into the next company. And that's what kind of got to Rise. So I was working in marketing. You market on someone's face, you know, it's the best place to market anything, right? So me and my buddy who's working in marketing too, we're like, oh, well, yeah, face stuff. Like Mike Tyson's got a face tattoo, you know, like all that kind of stuff. Like there's no better place, right? You put no equipment on, no gear on, it's just like your face. So we were into Toothpicks at that time, and they were all made of birchwood. So we said, okay, well, if you actually get a, you know, wood splinter in your mouth, you live with that, you know, like that. So why don't they make Toothpicks out of bamboo? Bamboo is stronger. It's a grass and you can digest it. So we're like, okay, let's do that. My original entrepreneurial experience started, my dad was one of the co-founders of Sobe Beverages. And my first jobs were like gas station sampling Sobe coffee all over, you know, Fairfield County. And the company that they worked with to flavor Sobe, I had known them or known of them. So I went to some old Sobe connections and I started having, like, we made organic flavored toothpicks with like blueberry, like tea tree oil, like all these awesome dope ingredients. And tea tree oil is actually really good for you. And so we launched it. We created a really cool tin. I think I got one here, I'll bring it later. We had like a mirror when you popped up so you can see if there's anything in your teeth. And we like thought of all these amazing things. The one thing we didn't think about was how to actually continue production. So we launched it, sold out, and we literally turned my garage into, like, you know, the toothpick drying facility, and like, it looked like Dexter in there. Like we set up like a clean room and everything. And like we dry, like literally dip like 10,000 toothpicks one by one. And then you got to almost pull them out one by one because you're sharp. So, after that experience of making it, we all looked around each other and we're like, are we going to actually do this again? Like that took like 2 weeks and like, you know, so we didn't have a way to keep producing it. So when we started Rise, I was like, okay, rule number one is get in the garage, create your own brewery. But rule number two is get the F out of the garage and get to an actual facility where you can make it, where, you know, you can expand your operations and create that factory line, production line kind of vibe. So yeah, learned a lot through the mistakes. So, you know, you can make a great product, but if you can't actually make it, and you can't make a profit on it, who cares, you know?
Exactly. And I'm really interested when you guys first put the nitrogen in Rise, and I guess you weren't calling it Rise at the time, but was there a thought there to like, oh, try and patent this right away? Or were there like other companies kind of starting off at similar points to where it would be tough to make a claim for that?
You know, it was a thought that others gave us. They said, you guys should look into this. We did look into it. We probably didn't look into it quite enough. I don't think we knew where this would get to. You know, I don't think we thought that in a couple of years we'd be selling at Walmart and Kroger and all over the country. So we kind of stayed like one step in front of the, you know, one foot in front of the other, and like kind of worried about the things that were right in front of us. We looked into it a little bit, and at that point in time, our lawyer, legal team, said that since Guinness had already been around nitro and liquid, that it wasn't a novel concept. So instead we started to buy up like slogans and like websites and like all that kind of stuff to build around it. But we didn't patent the process. We looked into it a little bit. Like at one point in time, I remember what we thought we could do is patent something along the way of nitroing specific to coffee. And here's the big reason why it's different than beer is we deal with coffee grounds. So coffee grounds are really a pain to deal with, especially, you know, there's not nitro cold brewing equipment that's really set up. So you steal from a lot of industries. We took stuff from the milk industry. We took stuff from the beer industry. We took stuff from the coffee industry and created our own setup. At one point in time, my co-founder's dad was looking at like the way that pool filters work, and we were going to potentially try and patent something having to do with the pool filter. But eventually we figured out how to deal with grinds without that. But
wow. For sure. Yeah, so obviously on this entrepreneurial journey, like you have to go into like going into business with the right people and scaling. Like, how do you find your co-founder? And you know, what were some of the best things that you've done while scaling, and what are some things you've learned from?
You know, two co-founders are two of my best friends. So we literally, I was, you know, brewing the coffee and having people over in New York, and we're all like, this is awesome. And we're like, how amazing would it be if we could do this together? So that was really natural. We found each other, and really, I think the cool thing about this is the product found us, you know, and it still does to this day. It's like we moved to where people want the product. And one thing that we said early on is like, we are going to keep brewing this as long as people want it. And we want to make sure that if somebody wants the product, wherever they are in the world, it's our job to figure out how we can get that product there so we can share it with them there. You know, so we found each other, the product found us. Lessons, one of the big lessons is, and that has to do with that, is like Elon Musk's first wife had this like really cool thing on Quora. She's a writer, and somebody asked her, I want to be a billionaire. I want to work really hard. Can I be a billionaire? And she's got this really long response, but like the cool part of the response is like, okay, so what? You want to be a billionaire? Who doesn't? You know, have you swum through the sharks yet? You know, have you gone through what it takes to get there? And she's like, on your road, you're going to get a lot of advice from people. And we got a lot of advice. You guys should do this. I used to do that. Let me show you how to do this. But what she said is like, listen to it, but like, don't do what they say, because you're special, because you're creating this special, unique thing, and you're attacking a problem at a unique angle. And she's like, if you really can create a unique problem, a unique product, you have two ideas that come together, and then they have idea sex. And for us, it was like Guinness and coffee. You know, like you could go into cold brew and all that stuff, but it was really the beer mentality, serving coffee in a can, nitroed, and coffee coming together and having like this idea sex. So some of the advice we got from people was like, okay, just focus on that. Go deep and narrow, just focus on New York City, like, you know, kill it there. And we're like, okay, well, we have this cafe and somebody wants our coffee in New Zealand. We want to figure out how to get it to them there. We were shipping coffee to Tennessee and Los Angeles before we even started shipping to Connecticut, you know, and we're all from Connecticut, you know? So literally we had like a 16 wheeler that backed up to our buddy's garage. And the 16 wheeler calls us up. He's like, yo, where's the brewery? I'm on these like really like narrow windy roads, like thinking that he's going to come to some warehouse. And we're like, just stop right there. Where are you? And we like take the pickup truck, put the pallet on the back of the pickup truck, and like push the pallet, like, you know, into the truck, because we didn't have a loading dock or a brewery or anything like that. So the people that said that to go deep and narrow were kind of right. But at the same point in time, we were driven to go far and wide. And there's something in the middle there where it started to make sense. And because we kept that passion to go far and wide, we'd say, okay, let's ship stuff out to LA. And now we grew an entire market in Los Angeles because we did that. Even though we stretched ourselves thin and people said, don't do that. Well, we grew an entire market out there, and we figured out what we could do too. And then we figured out in that process what we couldn't do. And you can't ship a product refrigerated. At that time, our product was perishable. You had to keep it refrigerated. And so we said, if we still want to have this mentality of going far and wide in this like, but we're a small team, how can we do it? So we created a shelf-stable coffee. So this coffee can get shipped without being refrigerated, which makes it a lot more affordable and easier because you don't have to ship with ice and you can ship big pallets across the country. So part of that mentality for us was like, keep listening to your inner self that tells you like, yeah, go, you know, just focus on this one town and like kill it there. That's what business is supposed to be. And it's like, yeah, but we want to get it out to everybody. Take in that information. And I think like, go for it. And then if your idea is working, pour more resources into it and keep building on that. But if it doesn't work, pull out early. So we pulled out of Nashville early because that wasn't working, but we kept pouring more resources into the West Coast and then eventually figured out how we could really get there with a shelf-stable can. Listen to people, but listen to yourself.
It's that balance. It's that balance. And so now when you're thinking ahead and about striking that balance, like moving forward next 5 years, I know before we hit the record button, talked about how everything's kind of changed in the last couple of months, but how are you thinking about that balance, like moving forward in the next couple of years?
I think we're thinking of it as people, product, and how to realize like what our core, what our mission is, who we are, and how you can expand and keep that. So like what products we come out with, we're going to come out with some new products. We just came out with an oat milk. So the same milk that we use for our lattes, we're just not putting coffee in it. And we came out with a Tetra Pak oat milk a couple of weeks ago. For us, that's just continuously like figuring out how we can create products that we love with ingredients that are awesome and organic and like not putting in anything that's bad for you that you wouldn't want your kids to have, and continuously growing a bigger like impact in people's kitchens. And I think as you're seeing with like COVID now, you know, people are home a lot more often and that's going to be like a new normal. So one of the awesome things about being home is, you know, you get to be with your family more, but like you can work from home and be in your own comfortable environment, but you're going to be missing some things that you know, have at an office. You're going to be missing the coffee office cooler type stuff. But with shelf-stable coffee, you can literally buy like 24 cans of coffee. You could store 12 of them downstairs in your basement. You can store 10 in a closet, and you can put 4 in a refrigerator. I think the future of coffee is getting that way, where similar to like when you buy bottles of water, you don't buy like one bottle of water or go to the water bottle store. You buy like a 24-pack. And when you get lower down to like 6, you know, bottles left, you buy another 24-pack. I think you're going to see a lot more people buying like bulk coffee and kind of creating cafes in their, you know, kitchens.
Can you talk about just like when you like more on the scaling aspect, but also just like managing employees? Like you were somebody who was working this 9-to-5 and then you kind of flipped the script. What are some strategies that you implemented when managing employees?
I mean, I think you got to right now, especially, and you got to manage emotions. I think people are emotional right now, and like time is moving at a different speed than it used to move. Things feel longer and shorter at the same time. People are now more attached to electronic devices, and you send emails and texts and people respond like right away. There's like less being out in the field and slow response time. Managing like figuring out where people are is important. Like, you know, people are more on social now or more online. And so now you've got to shift your focus from being out in the field and at like it's summertime, being at a concert, you know, there's no concerts anymore. So how do you reach that same 60,000 people? I think this weekend we're supposed to be having a tent at Governor's Ball in New York. And that's 80,000 people. So how can we reach 80,000 people this weekend the same way that we did last year? We can't, but we've got to figure out what that like new normal is. So I think people in like the marketing space, the event marketing space, are really trying to figure out like what that new thing looks like right now. And it's hard, you know, to be honest with you. I think like social messaging is important. But you know, managing people is just like kind of like we're all in this together, and let's keep our eyes out and say, what is working? What caught you? What brand was able to reach you with their new message in this new way? Okay, let's talk about how they got that to you. And then how can we then apply that same kind of like, you know, lessons to like how we can get to people with our products. But yeah, it's different. I think it's evolving and changing, and I don't really think that anybody's got a good answer right now. You know, you see a lot of people doing like live webcasting. I think podcasting is one of the big answers. Like podcasting is blowing up right now. You know, like I think people are looking for information and entertainment and also fresh information. You know, there's not a lot of good sources to get fresh information right now, in the same way that you could almost get fresh information by like going to a bar or a restaurant and talking to some friends and like hearing about what they got going on. But yeah, it's changing. I don't think anybody has an answer right now. The live cast streaming of like music is evolving, but I don't think it's there yet. You know, I don't think they're reaching people in the same way. And then when you go on the brand side of it, part of the reason why music is such an awesome platform is you get to be a part of that brand experience. So when people leave that spot, they're like, they feel great. And you're part of that great feeling. They saw a band that they love and they have a product that they love and they walk away being like, Rise is amazing. Music's amazing. And you're paying to sample with them and you're paying to get that feeling. But when you do it in like a live streaming way as a brand, we get approached with a lot of different, you know, live streaming concerts to sponsor, but you don't have the sampling side. You know, it's just a logo on a screen and then the band plays. So it's not the kind of like full soulful experience. So we're trying to figure out what those are.
That's really interesting. Like, because I think for both David and I, like, we always look at it kind of more from the athlete side, which I think analogous is probably more from like the artist or the concert, the venue, whoever's putting it on side. But that's a huge piece of it. And that's interesting.
Yeah. The amount of people, like, you know, if like 10,000 people come by our booth over a weekend, like the amount of people that have ever heard of our brand is no better than like 50%. And the amount of people that have ever tried the brand is probably no better than 30 or 40%. So you just got like 7,000 new people to try your product, which is huge. So how do you get 7,000 new people to try Rise this weekend? How can we do that? You know,
that's it. And connotated with that amazing experience, like you can't create that in everyone's home.
Yep, exactly.
Well, Jared, we're terrible at ending these. So we end with the Michelle Miller quick question round that we named after my mom because no one's got the sponsorship yet.
All right.
So while we're on that note, let's see. We'll start with person you'd most want to sit down to dinner with.
Probably Michael Jordan.
Favorite city in the world?
Miami.
All right. Is it okay to sleep with socks on?
I like sleeping without socks on, so it's okay, but I like no socks.
He's allowing it, though. That's key. favorite rom-com?
Roxanne.
There you go. Best spot to eat in Ithaca, New York.
It was College Town Bagels, but they got rid of that. So John Thomas.
I know you worked on Waiting with Ryan Reynolds. So wanted to know if you knew his one flaw.
No.
No flaws.
No. On the record, no. He's good.
You're good.
In 40 years, what are people going to be nostalgic for?
I'm still nostalgic for Nintendo, so I imagine that's going to keep on going. But in 40 years, what's going to be gone that's really popping today? Movie theaters.
Is a hot dog a sandwich?
It's meat and bread. So, by definition, I think so, yeah.
How much coffee do you drink in a day? The access to it.
I had 3 already. This is my 4th. I'm going 5 and 6 after this. So I'm generally at about 6 a day.
Company man, go-to quarantine snack.
I've been getting really into like cauliflower pizza and raw cashew nuts. Those have been my two trending things.
That's good ones. Better nickname for Stanford, Stan Vegas or the city that works?
Stan Vegas, baby.
Last question. In 2030, you can catch Jared McGovern blank.
In Greece. In Greece.
Love it. Love it. Jared, thanks for my life, man. Where can people follow you?
Jared McGovern on Instagram, and then Rise Barinko.
There it is. Jared, we appreciate it, man. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you, guys.